Welcome to Between the Before and After, a podcast about the stories that shape us. I'm your host, Coach John McLernan, and each episode I bring you an inspiring guest with a moving story that shines a light on the power of the human spirit. Before we dive in, I want to let you know about two very important things. Number one, the stories shared here are often gritty, raw, and vulnerable, and very likely will include speaking about sensitive topics suited for a mature audience. Number two, this podcast is also broadcast live on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. So on whatever platform you follow myself or Freedom Nutrition Coaching, you have the opportunity to participate in this discussion during the live stream. And we encourage your participation both by commenting and asking questions. And so this podcast is about exploring the stories that take place between the before and after photos, not just in the realm of weight loss, but in all areas of life. So let's dive in. All right, welcome back. It is my pleasure today to be hosting Kimberly Bell all the way from somewhere in Maryland, where it's very warm. Yes. How are you doing today, Kimberly?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
You know what? As you chatted about just before I got on, I'm a little bit warm and sweaty too because I just finished mowing my lawn. And
right. We're both in sync right now. Yeah. Weather-wise.
Yeah. Well, my studio is in the basement of my house, so it's a little bit cooler down there. So I have okay. That as an upside.
Well, see now. Okay. Now you had to just rub it in, right?
Yeah. Well, I also get like 8 months of winter here in Alberta, so you know, there is that trade-off.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we dive into your story, let's just get a little bit of a present day backstory. Where are you at right now and what do you do?
I am in Maryland. I am in Princess Anne, Maryland. I'm like 25 or 30 minutes, maybe roughly, depending on how I drive to Ocean yeah. City. And the most tourist beach around in Maryland. So I've been a case manager for over 15 years. I love what I do. I navigate cases and resources for different families and the different family dynamics. And it's just been such a pleasure doing what I do. And then with the COVID and then getting back to being able to put my eyes on them, even if they haven't seen someone for 2 years, it's just a bonding time, just the time that's saying, okay, somebody else cares and want to make sure that you are having your services rendered far as the family is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So a case manager, meaning are you working with children and families in like difficult circumstances?
Yeah, they have to qualify for the state program, but I work for individuals that's maybe on the caseload as a child or, you know, a family member, grandparent, mother, father, and they have either an aide, which is a family relative, but I just navigate and monitor the services that's in the home to make sure that they can stay in the community safe, or, you know, if they're in a nursing facility, transition them back home. So that's just one of the highlights. It's different families, different situations. So it's good to have an eye and just scope right particular for that family, you know, just trying to give them
yeah,
the best.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that the work that you do now is very closely and intimately connected to your own story. Would that be accurate?
That would be. It seems like I fall right into the public sector,
Yeah. And so in one sense, like when you're working with children who maybe have, especially who have like some sort of troubled background or disadvantaged background, you have an intimate understanding of what this is like because of your lived experience. So it's very different from maybe doing a course on it and reading a book about it. You've right. lived a very right. difficult experience.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely right. And that mother bond and even the grandparents bond or, you know, a family member that's raising them bond, you know, it just comes closer to home because, as you said, I've experienced along with the education because I do have a degree, but it just helps to have that balance and to be able to compassionately serve the best that I can and that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we were to rewind the clock a little bit here, we go back to kind of early childhood. One of the first things that's, you know, mentioned in your story is being abandoned. How old were you when that happened?
I was five when I was dropped off, yes, by my biological dad. And it's so crazy, John, because as transparent as I am, like, you know, people would want, especially with the family and with the generational era, would like to sugarcoat it, I guess that's what they were saying, or give it another name. And I had to struggle with that, John, to be really accepting and be real and not live a lie and just say exactly what it is and how it affected me. And as you state, at 5 years old, there was a traumatic experience that happened that day. And it was one of the worst, because it wasn't the first physical altercation, but that it was the worst. And I seen blood, my older sister seen blood from my mother's face. And I just wasn't shocked. I couldn't cry. My 2 year older sister was crying and yelling and trying to pull my dad off, but I just was frozen. And I can remember, just like, the older I get, the memory is still so vivid of this little child shocked and froze. And so he did what he did, and he took my sister and my mother to my grandparents' house, which is her parents. And then we traveled, just him and I. I knew that they had words, and she was saying, go ahead and take her, which was me. And that's the last time I physically lived with her, was that day. And I'm traveling with my dad in the back seat, not saying a word, being solid, because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know what to do. And he took me to his older sister's house, which is my paternal aunt. And I remember them as they were family members, but I couldn't recall that I lived, that I stayed overnight with them. I just knew that they were relatives. I knew that these wasn't strangers. That's the only known fact that I knew. And he said, I'll be back. He had words with my mom. Of course, he was still upset. And, you know, you could just tell. And she was talking to him, and he told me he would be back. And that was the last. That was the last time I stayed with any them two at all.
Right. So you were 5 years old. So prior to that, I mean, what memories do you have, like, in the first 5 years of life? I guess really it probably comes between ages of 3 and 5.
Sounds
like it was a pretty chaotic situation here.
It was. I do remember it spiritual. I do remember us going to church a lot. I remember my biological dad was a musician. He played the guitar and loved it. We were in and out of church a lot. I remember sleeping in church, because back then, now that I've known, it was a Pentecostal apostolic churches that they were attending. So as people know that background, you stayed in church a long time, tarrying and speaking in tongues and stuff. But at little, I remember falling asleep a lot of times in church and going to church. And I do remember the chaotic. It just never, as you were saying, from 3 to 5, felt that it was a loving environment between them two. I felt that it was always something. And then not only that, it was a icing on the cake with that, because it wasn't never a loving feeling from my mom to me.
Right.
And I'm looking at this woman from 3 to 5, or as you said, my knowledge is being aware that this is my mom, and I'm living with her. She's taking care of me. As this beautiful brown skinned woman that I just wondered for almost every day, what could I do to make her happy? What could I do to make her have a smile on her face? What could I say or do? How much of a better child could I be to see her laugh? Just not about me, but just towards me, her being kind. And that, John, built something inside of me that I had to take a look at later in life, because what I was building from this broken foundation of accepting and validation, love, hurt me down the road.
I can, you know, I'm a father to a 14-month-old, and so I'm just very early into my journey as a parent. But I mean, I already know, just you know, how much love I feel for this little human being. Like, my wife and I just look at each other sometimes and go, like, this is something that, like, we couldn't even imagine, like, how much love we have for this little person. So it's hard to imagine when somebody doesn't have that, but I could just, I just think about how important that is for healthy emotional development to have that.
It really is. And from the, as you said, emotional development, because we're talking about the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, you know, you had a really, really rough, like, foundation laid down, and then you just get dropped off, you know, was it some family's place?
And John, I do want to say it was quite different with my biological father and my sister. Mm-hmm. The feelings and emotions were different from my biological father and my sister. I did feel the emotions of they love me. He would come in periodically and throw me up and, you know, hug me, as you were saying, you know, about your kid. And I felt that difference. But the confusion always lied with what I didn't feel from her. I just want to clarify that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard to get any sense of closure from that, because there was just this open loop left there, this open wondering, like, what could I have done differently? What could I have done? And I mean, I think, like, the children are just so beautiful. I think, like, man, how do we not just love them? All I want to do is hug my kid all day long. Like,
you know? Sound like my adopted mom. And that's what she said. She said it was ironic that he called her when I was born. And I interrupted this call, interrupted her stories. And she said she came. Now, this is a story. I never got any closure or any story other than this story from my birth mom. This was come from my adopted mom, which was my paternal aunt that later on adopted me, said that during the birth of me, he called her and said she had the girl and come to the hospital. I interrupted the stories. And as she said, she came and looked at me, as you were saying, looking at this baby, she said, "You were just like the sweetest brown little human being." You know, and said she thought of Kim Hughes on the story, because I interrupted her stories, because she said Kim Hughes had this characteristic of such a sweetness and humbleness. And she said, she looked at my dad and she was like, "Why don't you name her Kim?" So that's how kind of my name came about, because I just...
Oh, that is awesome.
Right, right.
And so you go on to live with your paternal aunt, and you know, did you see much of your dad from there on out?
Periodically. Him and my mother had other children. And then it did eventually divorce. Mm-hmm. But periodically I did see him, and I remember a shift, because as I was seeing him, he was promising for me to go with him, and I would get packed and he would never show up. So I remember a shift around 6 or 7 that my adopted dad, which is her husband, my maternal aunt's husband, they were married when I came there to him and stayed married, said to him, had some words with him about that. And he stopped. And I remember a little gap. And then he came back. And as he was coming back, periodically updating my mother, which is still his sister, his older sister, about his life, about pastoring, about another family, about remarrying, about having other kids, he never acknowledged I was his child. Like, nothing. Like, I was confused. And I was, like, many times looking at him in a daze. But, you know, of course, that generational era, you were a child. You couldn't speak your mind. And saying, did he forget that I'm his child, and I really would want to go with him, but all these things in my mind.
You know, and it's just, there's something, like, you know, and again, I just reference my own little boy, like, my studio is downstairs, and when I come up the stairs, like, his face just lights up and he says, "Dada," and immediately he comes racing over. And I just couldn't imagine what that would do to his psyche if I was to reject him. And here, this was happening to you. Right. Now, so you're living with your paternal aunt and your, I guess it's your uncle. Did they become became your adopted parents?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And I didn't even know. I didn't know about that birth certificate until I got my first job. Yeah. It was a generational era that what goes on in the house stays in the house, and you didn't do anything to make the family members look bad. So it was like kind of hush hush. And I remember her introducing me to their church, which their church was AME Zion. And she said, "People are nosy, Kim, but you're our child. just remember that you are me and Daddy Bill's child. And she was saying that to me because we're still living in our hometown. Right. Instead of just enforcing the truth and having me accept and love the truth, it was more like
hide it.
Yes. Yeah. To make everyone look, you know, as not.
Right. Right. But we don't want, and that's such a natural human thing, I guess. We really grapple with acknowledging sort of the truth of our messy lives.
Yes.
You know, we feel this pressure. Yeah.
Yes.
That we're human. Yeah. We really feel like this pressure to just, you know, present an image before the world. And, you know, and I think this is what's really powerful about your story. And so what was it like? So did you stayed with him all the way until you graduated high school?
Well, I quit school, but yeah, I stayed with them until I was old enough to leave.
Right.
When I decided to leave. Yes.
Right. So, cause now I'm curious about if we're looking at like five and you left at what time, how old were you when you left and quit school?
I was around 17.
Mm-hmm. 17. Okay. Mm-hmm. So between 5 and 17 there, you know, you've had this really sort of traumatic foundation laid down, this one of abandonment, you know, wondering about love, kind of being confused, being told to almost like be ashamed of your past. So don't speak about it, that sort of thing. How did that affect like the way that you would have formed? Like, did you have siblings, like adoptive siblings?
No, I was their only child.
Okay. Were they unable themselves to have children? Is that
she was.
Right.
She was. And this was his second marriage. And I believe her second marriage. But I know that it was his second marriage for sure. Mm-hmm. And he had older children. So I was their child to get.
In a sense, you were then got raised as an only child.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe, I guess maybe there's some benefit to that. But so between, you know, how did that play out for you then in terms of just trying to make friendships with kids and things like?
You know, it's crazy because I always had this longing, especially when I seen the family dynamics of one of my childhood friends only had was from a single parent home, which was her mom. And I longed and I knew that that was her real mother. So I just admired and I just wanted to be always around them. And then there was another childhood friend down the street that had the mother and father. And it was always a longing. It was always a yearning of looking at, like, I'm from the outside looking in and saying, oh, man, I wish that was me. Or, you know, and not that I did not love my parents. Don't get me wrong. It was just because the foundation was broken.
Yeah.
And I was not willing to accept that this is just the way it is, you know?
Yeah. And I think that foundation that gets laid in those formative years, you know, the first 7 years of life in particular are so, so, so important to a child's development. And then we think, so you quit school. Was school something that was kind of difficult for you at the time, or what pushed you to quit school?
It was, but I would want to say, John, now back then they wasn't educated either. And that's makes me so much of an advocate. And I'm like, I love it when I hear about foster parenting and treatment, you know, classes for both parents, for the parents and the foster parents and the, you know, adoptive parents and all that, and the resources is given, because my family, my mother and father, the adoptive parents did not have any training. They did not have any training. They just did what they did best, you know. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. They did the best they could with what they knew, but they didn't, they didn't have much. They weren't equipped with much.
Because had they been, like you said, that word equipped, I love it. I really believe, like you said, that up to 7 years old would have been able for me to transition and deal with more of the traumatic experience in my mind than continue to growing up yearning and grieving, because I was grieving as well.
Yeah,
I was separated. It was a loss. It was completely a loss. And I'm saying, but why?
Yeah,
I don't want this to be a loss. Exactly. I want to stay, you know, no matter what the treatment is, I want to stay with these people that I knew, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, your biological mom, have you ever seen her since? Have you had the opportunity to reconcile?
I'm living in the hometown with her. Mm-hmm. And, I had, numerous occasions approached her, ran into her, was invited to a couple of her birthday celebrations by my sibling. tried to reach out. I've even asked one time when one of my siblings was having a child to get some answers. Never have never got any response from her. Even down now with the book, she has not responded to me. She's not came to me. She's not told me any different stories than what my paternal, you know, aunt has told me, or my father has told me. And I had found myself trying to buy her love, trying to force love, till I had to accept the truth of she, the last statement that she had made, and she said, "You have a mother," is that she did what she thought was best for her to give me to another mother, and to cut the ties of having a daughter, which was me, and relationship. And that was it. And that was one of the hardest things, John, that I had to accept and feel free with it and say, right. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll go back one step here and go, when you quit school, where did you go from there?
When I quit school?
Because you're 17, so you didn't graduate high school at that point. Is that correct?
No, because I had a baby at 15.
Okay.
Yeah, we gotta back up a little bit from the school. Yeah.
So you had a difficult high school then.
Yeah, from the little bit of time that I did go back after I had the child and was pregnant, because in the 70s it wasn't known of having, you know, and this, having a child at that young, you know, when I had her at 15, I was the youngest one at the hospital having her at that time.
Yeah. Right. And so there's a lot of shame connected to that as well.
Very much. Very much.
Right. Yeah. And was this with someone who you're in a relationship with at the time?
It was, but it stemmed from my first sexual molestation, or my first introduction with sex, intimacy, with my uncle, with one of the uncles from an extended family member that came to our house. And because my parents were so religious, they didn't know about it. But because they were so religious, they felt that they were helping him, for allowing him to stay and get his life bonded even more stronger with Christ, and becoming a new creature, because he had joined salvation, but he had prior history of sexual molestation that he had done time. But they were so into the spirituality, and God is a forgiving God, is that once he done that and demonstrated that they were going to do all they could to help him. So it wasn't where they intended, but once they did open the doors for him, he laid prey. And it wasn't about a matter of time, for about up in a year, that he introduced me to the sexual molestation.
Right. And how old were you when that started happening?
I was 12.
12.
Yes.
And like that, you know, that in itself is, again, how incredibly traumatic and confusing, because this is supposed to be a family member, and this is someone who's supposed to be, right. And someone who is, you know, supposedly like a man of faith, or trying to become a man of faith, and so on.
Right.
And, you know, we don't have to get overly graphic, but like, how does an encounter like this happen?
It was very groomed, but it was also, now that I can look back on it, it was accepting me. He kept saying to me, "I love you, Kim. I love you, Kim." And it was validating. He said, you're my beautiful Kim. Me and your birthday's the same day, you know? And so at night, when they were going to bed, he would say, there's a movie on. Not every night, but it would happen about two or three times a night. There's a movie on that me and Kim, I'll make sure that she gets to bed early. She won't stay to bed, stay up late. And they trusted him, you know? And so it started gradually with the come here, I love you. And then started with the kissing on the mouth 1 week. And then it would just gradually go from one thing to another. It never went into penetration, because I remember the one time that happened and he showed himself, I ran straight to my room, and he never did that again. I think he knew that I got scared. He never showed me himself again, but it was more of the other stuff, the touching, the, you know, the kissing, the, you know, and the mouth and stuff like that.
So he started grooming you. And I think what's, I say fascinating for lack of a better word, because, you know, and actually, maybe I'll just mention it. There's a book that I'm fairly passionate about. It's called Men Fight for Me. And it's the role of authentic masculinity in ending, you know, sexual exploitation and child trafficking. And I've interviewed this man, and, you know, in there he talks about, like, because you think, how do women get caught up in this? Because we look at the majority of victims are female, and they're young females, and they're usually in a foster care system, and they're looking for something, right? They're looking for some kind of validation, and a predator knows what kind of validation they're looking for.
Right.
And they don't know how to distinguish between what is the authentic masculinity and what is a predator.
Right. Yes, and this sounds like confused the hell out of me, because he's still saying, you know, I love you, and, you know, this is our secret, and, you know, I love you so much, and you're beautiful to me, and, you know, and like you said, even at 12, you know, even though I never started my menstrual cycle until I was 13, going on 14, thank God, but I had heart, I mean, I was a female, I knew, you know, and that kind of haunted me until I had to take grips and say, I'm not responsible for whether that was feeling good or not. It was wrong. It was wrong. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't have that emotional development.
Right.
And so the first time it happened, was it like a shock to you?
Yeah, it was. It was a shock. Like I said, the kissing in the mouth.
Right.
And I remember him thrusting his tongue in my, for the first time. And I'm like, whoa, like, and, but he, you know, held me. And this is like a thing that, you know, I'm yearning, because I never got that from my, you know, going back to my biological foundation, my mom. And he's like, but I love you. You love it. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I love you. You know? So.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh boy. That, you know, that's like sends shivers down my spine, because that's so like manipulative. And, and so you realize that like a part of you must somewhat recognize that this isn't right, or this doesn't feel right, or something feels a little bit off about this. Is that right?
At some point, but I didn't want to disappoint him, and I didn't want no one to be mad at me. And I think that even fell into my mind of not telling my parents, because here they might get mad at me. They might say I was responsible. You know what I mean? So
Right. They might have said, well, you were
exactly
tempting him or
make
something.
Sure everyone's clear and not getting mad. Yeah.
And that would be a protective response, because if we go back to like your childhood, you'd seen violence, domestic violence in the home.
Yes.
At a very, very young age, which leaves a deep emotional imprint. And so now you go along with this partly because there's this fear of, and I say go along with this for lack of a better term, like, but because of this fear of, well, I don't want to create conflict.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And let me add this too. I never felt secure enough that anyone would fight for me either.
You right. know,
I didn't feel that security, because I felt, even when that was happening, lost in this injustice that my mother didn't fight for me to come to get me and reclaim this daughter and raise with my siblings and her new husband. My dad didn't fight and come and get me and join me with his family. Who in the hell were going to fight for me?
Right. Yeah. And so this went on for, you said, for a little over a year. Is that right? Before you realized, okay, this is going too far.
A year, it was long enough. It was months, and then he ended up, because it would have kept on. He ended up, like I said, I tell the whole truth, and I'm very transparent. Like I said, the penetration never happened, thank God. Other stuff did. Everything else that you can imagine did, and he ended up finding a girlfriend, and my adopted mom, he called her his sister too, because this is an extended family member that wasn't blood there, but that was like my uncle introduced me as.
Sure. Yeah.
And so she said, well, let me meet this girlfriend. And so talk in the house. This was a worldly female, which was good for me, because this took him away from the house. But she said, oh my gracious, now you're going to be out of church. I can't help you. I don't understand why you and your brothers, the women are going to be y'all's downfall forever. So make a long story short, he ended up leaving because of, she said, this worldly woman. But when he left, John, I went in a depression mode. So now I'm 13 and I'm just, they didn't even know. I just isolated my mind and I was depressed because here, even though that was wrong 2 or 3 nights a week and left me confused, it was attention.
Right. Yeah. It was giving that part of your brain that was longing for some sort of connection, some sort of validation. And that was taken away from you.
Now I lost. They took. Yes. I'm like, what the hell? Oh my gracious. Yes. Yes. You got it. Yeah.
And all this while, like you're going to school, you're going to high school, you've got some friends and whatnot. So, at that point, did you ever tell your mom and dad? And when we say mom and dad, we're referring to your adoptive parents. Did you ever tell them this was taking place?
I told them my father passed away when I finally told my adopted mom. My adopted dad never knew. I couldn't find myself to tell him. Many times I wanted to, but I just couldn't find myself to tell him.
Was that because he would have felt some sort of guilt or responsibility for it happening and within himself?
As I got older, once again, the protective mode, I didn't want him to be hurt and lay blame or also feel like he didn't protect me. I didn't want to bring that pain. So no matter what pain I was going through, I didn't want to bring that pain to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And so this leads to you getting into probably some less than ideal relationships then, because now you're looking to replace what was taken from you.
There you go. This is what led to 15-year-old getting pregnant the first time.
Yeah. And then was this someone that you felt like you loved or that you were cared about?
I liked him a lot. He was older. Yeah. He was driving a car, but I didn't have any siblings there to talk to. It was definitely not on the table to talk to with my adopted parents, because my adopted mom had so many nicknames that she called the body parts. She said that you get pregnant by swallowing a black watermelon seed. I mean, it was just so crazy from her generation to bringing it to me, you know?
So now you're terrified of swallowing watermelons.
Right. definitely that wasn't on the table of me even comfortable enough to say, and like did this total opposite with my daughters, talk to me. This is open policy here. We're going to talk about emotions. We're going to talk about feelings. We're going to talk about intimacy. We're going to talk about sexuality. Here's the names. I really did not. If it wasn't for home economics and the nurse and the stuff that was going on in school that was turning in that generation, I would have probably been so naive of everything. But the school and my friends educated me more than my family. And that is such a sad no-no. That is just a no-no, because you know what happens, John, when you're looking for your friends and your the school to educate you on something that the family need to be educating you on. Yeah.
So you get pregnant, and what's kind of running through your mind when you like find out that, okay, I'm pregnant? Like, were you aware that this was a possibility?
I didn't. I just knew that months of ditching school, and I was doing very well when I met this guy that was driving, that I thought that was the coolest, and was an older guy that finally had an attention for me. I was, in high school, doing very well, and ditching school and months was John doing almost the same thing. I was what's the word? I was
like, how much older was he than you?
He was 4 years older than me. He lied and said that he was in school. He had, graduated, but he had graduated. He was older than me. It was 4 years. Yeah.
And at that age, that's actually still a pretty big gap.
It is. And, I just liked him with him driving and everything, and that, he had attention. But I remember months of repeating the same
pattern
cycle of intimacy, or the need, craving that need that I was doing with my uncle. For months, I did the rubbing and until it got to that almost where he wanted to, you know, go to the last, and I would get scared and I would say, oh, my stomach hurts, or, you know, da, da, da. So for months I had done that till I never forget. I was all like excused out, and I never forget. He was just like, come on now, you know, da, 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 da. And I was just like, okay. So that's how my first sexual experience of breaking my virginity was like giving up of my choice and my, you know, being like, okay, you know what? I can't think of another excuse. I done played this long enough. Let me just go ahead and do it. And first time I got pregnant.
Yeah. And so how did he respond when he found out you were pregnant?
Well, my mom told him. So, you know, he was up to the, you know, he definitely, you know, played his part as a father and, you know, stepped up and everything. But I found out running cross country and I fainted. And even though the nurse kind of thought that I was, she called my mom and told my mom to take me to the doctor. Why did we go to the pediatrician doctor, John? Went to the pediatrician doctor, 15 years old. And she says, she's pregnant. She's like, I think I was like 4 or 5 months. And she said, my mom was like, what? And I've been still giving her baths naked in the tub, pregnant where? Because I was still this then, flat, you know? And I just was like, you know, I frozen again. Here's this now, not little girl, but now big girl, frozen, shocked. Like, what in the world is going to happen to me? So I remember I ride home and she said, now, I'm going to tell your dad. You just be there, present. I'm going to tell your dad, and you know he's not going to be pleased about this. That humiliated me so bad. That tore my heart up. Mm. And I didn't say anything. Then she said, we also going to have a meeting with a pastor, you know, your Pop Mac, you're going to tell him. That was another humiliation.
This is piling it on.
John, yes. Yes. So all this happened during these 9 months, these meetings and this devastation that I'm just like, and then one of my uncles, I remember, that I was really close to, that looked like my father a lot. They resemble, and they were close in age, and it was like connecting with him because I couldn't have my father. So I connected with him a lot with the fact that he's not doing this, what the other extended family was doing. And there may be something true to this. Even when he was told that I was pregnant, he started showing differences towards me. I was like, oh my gosh. So like you said, it was just piling on.
Almost like feelings of a little bit, maybe of abandonment coming back again, because all these people are their shame is causing them to disconnect from you and to relate to you in a different way now.
Yeah. So she sat down, and after she told my dad, and my dad, I don't think he knew how to cope with it. Now, mind you, he's over 10 years older than her, even though they're up there in age. But I didn't think he knew how to cope with it, even though I knew that was no doubt that he loved me and he wanted to protect me. He was very quiet during the whole time that I was pregnant. He did not say too much. The conversation changed. I just kept looking at him and saying sometime at night, I really messed up this time. I really hurt him. So that was something that I had to live with and deal with, because I felt like I hurt it. The one person that I knew without a shadow of a doubt that could protect me and that loved me. And I did this, you know? And so she did say, now she was more of the controlling and the
like powerful person.
In the house. He was the foundation. He was the spiritual one. Even though he disciplined me, but he was more the spiritual one and the one that laid the balance. So he wouldn't let me play against him, but he laid the balance.
Right.
Of trying to create this broken foundation in love and with some morals and ethics. He was the one, you know. So she said, you know, she did a lot of the talking. And after she said to him, yeah, you know, she's pregnant and she's there's so many weeks. And yeah, you know, it's that boy, Willie. And then, and then she saw, you know, the conversation turned to me. And then she said, and you know, Miss Lady, if you were 12 years old and you got, now mind you, John, they don't know what happened to me at 12. But she's saying, if you were 12 years old and this happened to you, you would still have this baby because, you know, in this family, we do not believe in abortions. So now, Miss Lady, since you got your, this is her talk. Since you got yourself in this situation, you are a woman now. You have no more birthdays because now, mind you, I'm 15 and we got the due date. We're analyzing the due date. She's going to come just before I turn 16. So it was always talk about a 16-year-old sweet 16 birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So she made sure I knew right then that day. No more birthdays for me because all my birthdays, now that I got myself in this position, goes to my kid. So, John, for 9 months, mentally, physically, I was warped. I just did the best the hell that I could in that talk that she resonated in my mind that what situation I got myself into, whether I wanted to be or not, I am a woman now. So I do the part.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So your daughter's born and
daughter's born July and I turned 16 in August.
Okay. So this happened over the summertime. So you weren't at school at that time. So then you got to try to go back to school with an infant daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any kind of support?
But she watched her.
Mm-hmm.
It was more, I just felt such like a disgrace to everybody, to my friends, to the school, to, you know, I just felt like I did it. I really messed up this time. And so I couldn't come home and talk. I felt like, and I say that in the chapter of my book, a silent cry, that I was crying every day, but I it was silent. I could not release it. Who cared that I released it? Who was going to fight for me to release it? So I just tried to do the part, fit the part, and sing. Mentally, it wasn't working. I felt lost going back to school. And I tried it for a couple of months. And I remember coming back home and saying to her, I decided to go and get a job. I said, I'm going to work. I'm going to quit school. Her response, my mom's response, because she was keeping the baby at the time, was, okay. And that's how I ended up quitting.
So you end up getting yourself a job and, you know, and trying to raise this kid with the help of your mom and your dad along the way. And
the father, he was supportive, but even at this time I'm being introduced to, because he's older, I get introduced to the first experience of someone cheating and putting their hands on me. I lied about him putting their hands on, but I was crushed about the cheating. And this is what my mother said. She said, all men cheat. She said, the only ones that doesn't cheat is the ones that's dead and the ones that can't because of a physical reason. Yes. So I was just like, wow. So this pain is real and it's going to have to happen probably again. But so I remember our first physical altercation and I think it was a slap, but it kept getting worse over time that I stayed with him. And finally, I just said, I can't take no more when I was, got pregnant again for the second time by him. It just made me feel, as you said, me looking back from my birth mother, is that maybe this is acceptable. Is this how someone that says they love you really treats you? You know, maybe if I'm a better girlfriend, maybe it will stop. Maybe he is sorry, you know?
You know, because you never, again, it goes back to never having that foundation, never really understanding what maybe authentic love really is.
Right.
And so how do you know what to look for? You know? And so now you've got a second daughter. How far apart are your daughters?
10 days from 2 years. One was born July 31st and one was July 21st.
Okay.
In 2 years. Yeah.
And so now you've got two daughters. You've got a job because you're trying to make ends meet.
Right.
And this fella, he starts abusing you because you're having altercations, and that's how men seem to resolve altercations.
Right, right.
So you go, okay, that's it, we're done. Mm-hmm. Where do you go from there?
So while I was pregnant, there was a gentleman that was liking me, and my mom encouraged me to let him know, you know, that I was pregnant. He was very supportive near the end of my pregnancy and my decision of not going back to their father and dealing with the same treatment. But because he had military background and because he had income solid enough, and he, as my mother said, accepted me with a child and having another child, you know, that, when I told her that we were going to live together and, you know, be together, she said, why shack? We, you know, we don't shack. When you shack and you feel that, if you're good enough to sleep with him at night, you're good enough to marry. So they signed, well, she did, for me to marry him just before I turned 18.
Right. So because at that age, you're not legally permitted to. Right.
Right.
So now you're married with two kids just at 18 years old.
It's unbelievable. It's believable. It's true.
I know. I mean, of course, I'm looking at this through the lens of, you know, my understanding around behavioral psychology as well. And I'm just hearing all of these things and I say cringing, but I just mean, because I have the benefit of understanding now and the benefit of hindsight and experience, I look back and I go, oh, if only, you know, if only we knew what we know now, back then it could have been different, but it didn't turn, you know. So how did things go with this fellow?
It didn't last a year. We wasn't ready. Yeah.
No, of course. Cause you're a kid.
Right.
You're a kid with kids.
And out of all the marriages, like I said, he was very a nice guy. It's just, we wasn't married. And I was very upfront with, as I had always been with my mother and my father, a little bit, as she said, she passed away in April of this year, that I talk too much. I tell too much of my business or whatever, but I also was mindful of, as she and my dad taught me, to speak the truth.
Right.
Never be ashamed and to speak the truth. So it just played hand in hand with me that she didn't really like, but
she didn't like the truth.
Exactly. So, but I did not hide about my feelings of liking him, but just wanting to get a place and move out of there. out of their roof. And she thought otherwise, you know, she's just was from that generational era. She kept moving it from what she was taught to, now I'm going to teach her that your body is too good to just, you know, lay up with a man. You get married, whether you love him or not, you get married. Yes. Yeah,
so. Right, right, right. And so did you have to go back to your mom and dad's place?
No.
No,
I never went back there.
Yeah, no, that's it. No, not going back. So now, at that point, are you trying to live on your own? Like,
I'm still in my hometown. I'm going through different relationships, being just honest with older men. Now I'm searching. I'm lost, but I'm falling with older men now. To just feel this. I think I was trying to feel that uncle thing again, that disconnection, and here my dad, I had disappointed him so much. Like, you know, he was my protector, and he used to brush my hair, and he used to, you know, but once I got pregnant, all that changed, you know? So.
Right. Right. Yeah. Seeing you differently. You're no longer like a little girl in a sense.
Exactly. And, exactly. Right. I still was his daughter, but I'm sorry, but I, was definitely different in his eyes. And I kept trying to search for something different, you know, and was searching for the same, searching for what I was yearning, you know, in older men. So I'm going through, you know, that, and I meet another older man across about 2.5 hours from where we live. And I found myself now running. All this time, John, I'm living in my hometown where my birth mother is. I'm like not even 2 hours away from my birth father. Both of them have different families, different husbands, other children. And no one, especially my birth mother, never kept in contact with me.
Mm.
So I'm still like devastated. And I'm trying to deal with this trauma of, I know she was told. We only have one hospital in our hometown. I know she was told that I was pregnant. I know she told that I had a baby. But my adopted mother was there. But no gifts, no phone calls, nothing had happened since the day that I left her, from her. Mm. So I'm like, get some roller skates on, girl, and get the hell out of your hometown.
Right,
for them. For them. And check this out, John. I was leaving for them. I was leaving for her to have her life and my siblings to have them without me having to want to be in their life. Since I made such a disappointment, I felt, having a child, dropping out of school, what the hell should I be in the hometown living around them for?
Right. And now you've got two kids.
Exactly.
And a failed marriage.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just doing worse. I'm just going from bad to worse.
One after another. You know, I think, we can have a chuckle now, I think, because you've done such incredible work to get to the place where you're at. But I mean, I just think back with such compassion for this young Kim. And I think you probably, look back
When I had to revisit this in a memoir, I had a therapist too. I just kept breaking down And I remember saying to her, do you think I'm crazy? She said, no, you're human.
Yeah, you're human.
You're human. She said, and you have every right to have those feelings.
Yes. Yeah. And so you left your hometown, got 2 hours away. You're going to try and build a new life. You know,
my second husband. Yeah.
Met your second husband. Okay.
He's 11 years older than me.
Yep.
Accepted both of the two kids. Didn't have any kids.
Yep.
History. Not too long. Been out of being incarcerated. I just go from bad to worse.
But you know, but again, there's probably getting some kind of validation that you were looking for, because again, you're still, you weren't given this level of understanding that you now have when you work with other people. You weren't given this level of understanding. This pattern is playing out on repeat because you're looking to meet a need, you know?
Right.
So you meet your second husband, 11 years older, and he did you start living together? I guess you did if you got married. Yeah.
Because his mom got really upset with his mom because his mom, you know, spilled the beans. You know, she was very, you know, she had to tell me, this young girl, you know, coming in himself, and she was like, have you wondered why, you know, he doesn't have a place of his own? He has to call me and whatever. So that should have been a warning sign for me then. But as you said, I was young.
How old are you at this time?
He clerked out. He cussed her out. I was probably like 19 going on.
Okay.
20. Yeah. 19. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 19. Maybe.
And so he really let her have it verbally.
Oh my gracious. Oh, I never seen him that angry. And I remember saying it to him. I was like, cool down, you know, calm down. This is your mom. But once again, like you said, this broken foundation and not me even learning or taking the time to accept me and learn me and love me, I felt needed. I felt wanted. I felt like I could help. And all that played a part in me.
Well, maybe seeing this broken human and going, well, I'm a broken human too, without too. Those. And if I could help him, maybe I could find healing in helping another one or something,
right,
you know?
Right.
Right. And this idea that, okay.
It was an attraction. As you said, that brokenness is real. It was an attraction because I now look at my relationships down the line, this broken attraction. I really believe every last one of them I came into mentally and emotionally broken. And that was an attraction because they were too.
Yeah.
In some degree. Yeah.
And how, so this one, obviously, I'm not sure, like, how long did this one last?
Oh, now this stayed longer.
Okay.
Thank you, John. But this was almost 9 years in this. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was with me when my dad passed away.
Okay.
And when my dad passed away, he was the one that told me that spiraled to another grief and depression that led to, it wasn't the cause of the marriage not working out, because there were physical altercation with him too.
So he became physically abusive as well.
And emotional abusive because he was older. And one of his sayings was, no one would love you like Manny. No one would love you like me.
Right.
And then he would say, as the years would build up, is no one's going to want you with four kids. No, you know, he would, you know, right. He would do things and he would say things to make me feel not worthy, not my self-worth, mm-hmm. was just, you know, and yeah. Yeah,
just to control you and I guess keep you in that relationship. Yeah. And, you know, and so if you're saying four kids, does that mean that you had two kids with him? Is that right?
Yes, I did. Yep.
Okay. So we're getting, you must be getting close to 30 now at this point, you know?
I'm growing in age.
You're getting close to 30 and you know, you had this chaotic. And so,
because by the time I was 24, let's make it for the viewers to follow. By the time I was 24, I had four kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. At 20. Yeah. So, and then you realize, okay.
The last one was born in 97.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. No, so I got to get out of here now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you decide I'm getting out of here. This isn't working.
Well, after
you
know. My dad passed away, it just kept getting worse. The more I wanted to invest, well, I wouldn't say invest in myself because that's what I wasn't doing. The more I wanted to be more self-sufficient because I wasn't looking at my children, my girls, too much seeing what I was going through and the unhappiness, but I was trying to get them to see, especially when one time he took the bank card, that I had to go back and get some education. I had to go back to school. I had to show them that if something did happen to me, underneath this roof, I was able to, or happened to him, I was able to take care of them financially.
Right.
Because it hit me so hard. Not so much. I mean, over time, it had to play where I said, oh no, I am, if I had his daughter, I said, and I used to tell him, if I ever get the courage to leave, you'll never get me back. It's just that I have to get the courage. And he was, you wouldn't think I was joking. He said, you're not going anywhere, da 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 da. And he would play games, mind games or whatever. But I warned him months, probably years. And until I just chose to, regardless of wanting to live for my kids and wanting my kids to be in a two-family home, I couldn't take it anymore.
Right, right. Yeah. And Did he ever take out any of that physical aggression on the kids or only on you?
No, just me. Mm-hmm.
And did they ever witness that?
Oh yeah. One of the daughters, the last Candy, the middle girl, one time got into it, got in the middle of us.
Trying to get it to stop.
Or? Trying to protect me. Yeah, trying to protect me. Mm-hmm.
And she was how old?
She was probably in her early teens at that time.
Man. And so are all four of your children girls?
No.
Oh, you have
the last adult child is a boy.
Okay. Yeah. You got three daughters and a boy.
The last adult. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Aw. And okay. So we go now, where do you go from here? I've got to get myself out of this.
Yeah. I remove myself, but I'm still, and now that I think back, I felt even more lost because I had, my dad was gone and I couldn't verbalize it. I couldn't mentally, you know, and then even when he passed away, my adopted mom, his wife, sold the house within 2 years. I don't want to, I hope I'm accurate enough, but it wasn't long before she sold the house. So there's my foundation she even letting me know. She just told me, I'm going into a senior living assistant place. I done sold the house. What the hell? So even if he's beat me to a pulp, I can't go back home. Ain't no home, you know? So like, you know, and when he passed away, I remember, you know, crying all the way from 2.5 hours to get there. And my kids, matter of fact, the two oldest ones was spending the summer there. So they were there when he passed away because the one is really close to her grandfather, took it very hard. And when I got there at the funeral and everything, she pretty much like gave all his stuff to my dad and to my uncles. And I'm just here silently like, what about me? I knew her, his older kids. They came to the funeral. They were very respectful. They let me line up and, you know, be, you know, ahead of them and everything like that. They spoke to me and they were very respectful. But when it came to the only thing that, and it really did something to me, but it helped shape the way I had to deal with then her funeral, because I then had to understand their family dynamics. Mm-hmm. And so she felt that her siblings needed or had more
like need of her possessions.
His possessions than me. Mm-hmm. So I ended up with a robe and his Bible. But I'm so glad that I ended up with his Bible, because I have it by my bed. Mm. And now I'm just going to get back to the story. But mentally and emotionally, that was my first experience of a death loss that was so crucial. I did not know how to get myself back. Yeah, mm. I did not know how to get myself back. I was just spiraling everywhere. And I was still in the ministry. I was just doing whatever I thought that I could to validate, to make him proud, or to redeem this so devastating, destroyed life.
Right. Yeah.
We lined up that I've had.
Yeah. So you're trying to do something to sort of piece this back together, you know. Man,
I'm struggling. We're divorced, but I'm struggling.
You're somehow going to make that work. So, mm-hmm. you know, you you got the courage to leave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how did he take it? Like
he didn't take it well at all.
Right. Because yeah, someone who's losing control doesn't take it well.
No, he didn't take it well at all. And I went through a betrayal of experiencing confidential stuff that I told him that happened in the ministry that I knew that was true. He manipulated it to work in his favor. To get the house, I walked away from nothing. I didn't. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so now you've got to rebuild again.
I do.
And were you about 30 at this time?
Yeah. 30, you're about right.
30, four kids, trying to rebuild from nothing. You've had some losses. How do you do that?
So I go through two more marriages. The one, he was in the ministry. It didn't last even a year. It was just doing something that I thought that I was in the ministry and so heavy in. And, you know, just because someone says the Lord told me you were going to be my wife, I kind of captivated it. Yeah. not even trying to figure out, you know, to know this person inside out. But lesson learned. And then I married my child that I have now, 6 years old, father. And that lasted almost 3 years. But I walked into that as an accepting of someone's broken. Someone needed my help. I'm broken. And I can help, and we can accept each other just where each other is. Mm. So it didn't, you know, our lifestyle was totally different. And I knew that I was just compromising, which I've learned I can choose not to, especially when I know that my lifestyle is not that way. He was a drinker and he was a smoker, and he his prior history of drug use was totally different from mine. But here again, I'm like, if you can accept all this shit that I've done and had, you know, for sure, why should I accept you? And we can just build this life together, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And somewhere along the way, you got yourself an education as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I, even being misdiagnosed from PTSD, I was in resource for 6 years, and they diagnosed me in my elementary school year of mild retardation. But I went back to school, mm-hmm. and that second marriage that he was 11 years older than me, got my high school diploma, enrolled into my hometown. This was the first program that they offered. Do you get your high school diploma, the same diploma that you would get in high school? And guess what? I was picked out of the one of the fives to talk about my life. Who would have known? Just me.
You know, I was going to say, you said one minor detail there that maybe isn't so minor, but you passed over it. And that was at a certain point in your life, you were diagnosed as having sort of mild retardation. We might call it cognitive impairment. Yes. What they didn't realize was this was actually PTSD.
Yes. Yeah. So, I couldn't retain information. So
brain.
I would, for 6 years, I started with resource, and I had this book called Izzy that I read every year, but when it came to numbers, like I could get to an example of 25 one day. Mm-hmm. The next day you would ask me to start counting and I would just stop at 19. I couldn't go. I just couldn't retain information. So they did their testing at the time, which was not a lot in the 70s. And here again, with me being adopted, and I didn't even know that I was adopted. They just went by the forms that they got. It wasn't no kind of history of peeping into where did this girl come from? What life did she come from? You know? So
yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Wow. So. Okay. You know, oh man. Okay. So now your past, was it your fourth marriage?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And you got yourself an education and whatnot.
And I went to college.
You went to college. Yeah. Yes. In your 30s.
I went to college. Matter of fact, the divorce I think was final that month or in that year that I graduated from my undergrad. All my kids were there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that is something quite remarkable.
Right.
You know, and so
something especially that the academically they said on paper that I would not read or write effectively.
Mm-hmm. And here you're graduating from university or college. Yeah. Yeah. With and what was your college education in?
A BA in human growth and development and a minor in psychology and counseling.
Yeah. So you must have had like so many aha moments when you're studying this stuff, I would think.
Right. Right. When and crying go, moments. Yeah.
No kidding. Because there's probably a feeling of like, why couldn't I have learned? Why couldn't somebody have known this earlier? Why couldn't I have encountered somebody who knew this earlier? Yeah. Man, that would have saved me from so much, you know?
And the rewarding thing about it is even when I was adapting a different learning style for just the would work for me, because mm-hmm. I still get, you know, tongue-tied. I might talk like educated people, but I can say something and it's all backwards. And then even processing, if you hear me pause some, it's because I have an issue of, you know, processing. And I had to learn to adapt a different learning style that works for me to process it. No matter how crazy it might look to someone, and I've been told, you know, sometimes my exes be like, "You just stare at me like I said something wrong," and I'm like, "I'm trying to think, I'm processing what you said." Right? And my kids kill me because they're like, "Okay, all right, we're gonna let you have your moment for a minute." But even so, when I started educating myself and going through the school and the books and stuff like that, I start getting tickled and just having, like you said, the aha moment, because I start thanking God, because my resource teacher that I had, and she never gave up on me. She kept working with me for the whole elementary school years, and she didn't look like me. She didn't look like us, and she would not force. She said to my parents, I remember, she may be seen by someone else. Like she encouraged them some outside help, mm-hmm. but their response was prayer changes things. That's all they knew back then. And so she just let it be, but she still would not let that hope. And she kept saying to me, and she was building me unconsciously, not knowing. That's why, you know, I just give so much kudos to teachers and stuff, because that was one that said to me, "You are a special child." And she said, "I'm not going to give up on you." And she, if I did not have her, trust me, my route would have been differently. But that was someone that was in the educational, aspect or sector. Yeah, that I was blessed to have. That said, you know, and called it like it is. She said, "You're a special child." She said, "But I will not give up on you."
She saw something in you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So after the fourth marriage and the divorce is finalized, you've got your undergrad degree. What age are you now at that point?
After the fourth marriage, I'm in my late 30s.
Okay.
Yeah. Going into my 40s. Yeah.
And so where do you think, now where do you go from there? You know, the number of times I've asked that question, but you know, where do you go from there? Yeah. You know, fourth marriage is over, but you have a degree. So now you have a way to maybe earn a better income because you've now got this education behind you. Did that lead you to like better employment and like open some doors for you?
Yeah. And it kept, and it also started instilling me, wanting greater, wanting for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, like realizing you're worthy.
On the financial part. Yeah. it had to grow on me with the self-worth part, but on the financial part, I started getting it. I said, okay.
I'm going to start to earn some money here. Right.
I can do this. I don't care how long it's going to take. I don't care if I fail a test one time. If they offer it again, I'm going to take it again until I pass it. If there's more money in it, that's what I'm going to do.
Absolutely.
So I was getting it. Yeah.
You know, and so I'm, there's so many, you know, elements of your story to kind of explore, but let's fast forward to kind of today, you know, so, cause we've covered a lot of ground and I think, you know, for people who want to know more, of course, you know, like your memoir has got to be just like this crazy, interesting read, you know? So you wrote a book as well.
I did.
Yeah.
So this was in my 40s, since we're going down the timeline. And after that last marriage, you said, well, you know, where do I go from here? I did get involved with, you know, relationships in between. And that's going to be in my second book. But I did get in relationships.
Yeah, one book can't contain your whole story.
Exactly. Between. And then I got into a relationship after that that marriage that really put the light bulb. Into it broke. It was a very toxic breakup where it really made me take a look of the cycles of these relationships and how I got into them.
The people that you kept looking forward to, it is on repeat, like to fill that same sort of need. And you go, I got to break this cycle.
And I said, look, especially after that, when I said, God, give me the ability to choose me, whatever I have to do to break this cycle, to break this cycle of feeling like the abandonment issue, the rejection, that I can't take it. It's very hard for me to let go and move on. I'd rather stay in something that I know that's not healthy for me, because I don't want to feel that pain. I don't want to feel that hurt. I don't want to feel not being needed. For what? Why wouldn't I be wanting to be needed? Why wouldn't I want to be loved instead of just accepting that I am not for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And that, like you said, love don't hurt. And love, once I found out what love isn't, then I started wanting to embrace what love is. Okay.
Right.
Show me and let me embrace it and give me the heart that I'll be open to knowing what love is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think about your kids, like, and all that they've seen, and, you know, like your oldest one would be
33.
She'll be 34
this year. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So she's seen a lot.
Yes.
You know, and you must have had some epic conversations with her.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I think like all of your kids, like just the number of things that I guess they've seen, they've done, they've been through, and now kind of like knowing what you know now and doing what you do, you know, do you, what are they doing, and how have you like used this experience that you've been through to really kind of help them walk a different path?
Well, I have, they're very proud and they're very supportive, even down to the mini.
the mini.
I call her, she's almost 60, but, they're very proud. And I really believe the memoir, the oldest one was the first one that read it. She had to go and get it immediately. And some things in the memoir, she did not know. Especially because she's all my pregnancies, all the births are in there, especially about, you know, I laid the foundation, but she didn't know. And, she, you know, some things. And I now believe now that they're grown, all of them are grown, except with the mini, have seen me fighting so hard to break a generational curse that makes me very humbly and blessed that they are a living witness of that. And that no matter what I went through, that I did not allow it to break me.
Yeah. It's the unbreakable Kimmy Bell.
topic.
You know, this is quite something, and it must feel actually kind of exciting. It's like, You have this life ahead of you now with all of this experience and whatnot.
Exciting, and at one time it was very scary that I had to come to grips about fear. Because one of the courageous move, I've been courageous in different aspects of my life, like choosing to leave relationships that I knew that wasn't working. But then here's another aspects of being courageous to tell my whole truth, nothing but the truth, and being transparent about my whole life and still live in my hometown. Also being courageous enough to be loved and build my self-worth and build my self-esteem and to accept that I did not have a normal life, you know, beginnings. I should say beginnings. I didn't have a normal beginnings, and it was,
you did not get a fair start in life.
Yeah, but it don't stop there.
Yeah.
And I can choose for it not to stop there. I can build, I can have, and this is what was so such a blessing for them to see now that I'm living this season in my life, is that I'm taking back control and claiming the life that I want to live, and refusing to live a life of shame, a life of fear, and that I'm so worth it. I don't have to be confused about intimacy, because intimacy was, as you know, with your wife, is made to be beautiful between two
people. Yeah.
It's made to be one of the lovingest, beautiful experiences in the world. And I'm going to get that, John. I'm going to get that. I'm worth that. So, but I have a place. Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you know, what drives you forward now, you know?
Consistently, constantly breaking those generational curses. My oldest daughter, she had her first child, which she only has that one at 24. She's a high school graduate. All of them's high school graduates. She's the first of the siblings that got her master's last year.
Wow.
It's just amazing. And all my children have been with me. All my children, I have, at times I had to accept that why I overcompensated of them never wanting to feel that the void of me. I had to give a talk to myself. Said, now look, this is when I had a therapist in my life. Okay, now. Come back.
Right.
You know? And it's so crazy now, because I'm loving the season that I'm able to still love and be a mother to four adult children, which is different from being a mother to my minor and loving their sibling just as much, but it's in a different type of way. And I pray constantly. I build my support system, which involves God first. And I'm investing in me. I'm doing my nature walks. I'm doing what Kim enjoys doing. I'm breaking every day those feelings of bondage of wanting or expecting a phone call or expecting to be a part, when I can be okay with just me.
Yeah. You know, and I think the subtitle in your book is Accept and Embrace It All. Is that right?
Yes. And I got that. I got that during COVID. And each chapter, it came to me, I think about the second chapter, Accept and Embrace It All. I said, that's it. Mm. And then I had to, like I said, that first chapter gave me so much of such an emotional ride. I talked to my therapist. She didn't even know I was writing a book. Matter of fact, she when it got published, I sent her a book, and she was like, oh my gracious. I broke down, and I knew that I needed her help, because still I'm in my hometown. Some of my siblings wasn't supportive of me telling my story. And as we talked about, you know, my birth mother, now I'm close to one of my aunts, which is one of her sisters, and she's got a book, and, you know, she's very supportive, and we still go out to lunch, and, you know, she calls and checks on me and stuff like that. Yeah. So we have a really good bond, but she even encouraged, you know, her to, you know, read it, and she refused to. And I, you know, I've accepted that broken women that have children, let's say women that have children can be broken too. But I am not responsible for her brokenness. That's what I had to accept. That blew me away, because for years I felt in a bondage of being responsible. As you were saying before, what could I have done? why this could, you know, how could it have been any different? What could I have done to be any different? Or, you know, what was her reason, which I still don't know, to not come back and get me, to fight for me, but just accept that this was a plan of my life. This was a part of my life that had to be planned out, that had to be done. Yeah.
You know, and I just wonder if, you know, when she made that break, that she just basically had to cut off that, I don't know if you could say, like, cut off that emotional limb, for lack of a better metaphor, you know, cut it off, and because it would be too painful to revisit that. And every passing year, it would become more and more painful to go back there. And so it had to be like cut off completely. And and so there's like this emotional shutdown. It's like, because if that door was to be opened, it would, she feels like it, maybe it'd be like over, it would overwhelm her and drown her in like pain, sorrow, regret, remorse, all these different feelings. So it's like that door stays firmly shut and is never going to be opened again.
Right. And, but here as a child and as growing up and knowing her, I had to accept that, John.
Yeah,
I had to accept that behavior, and that may be her reasoning, and respect that. Do you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. So who do you have in your life now that supports you? You know, who are your supports that help you keep moving forward?
Well, first, you know, my children, for sure.
Children,
for sure. I have I have aunts. I have, you know, cousins. I have, you know, I have nephews. I have the best support system that has been willing to, you know, had chose to accept me.
They wanted to be a part of that.
Yes,
you know?
They wanted to be a part. And I would not want it no other way, you know, because for years I felt I was chasing after, you know.
Chasing validation.
Yes. Yeah.
And now you don't have to do that anymore.
I don't.
You know, you're now living a life of freedom and liberation. Well, boy, we went a little longer than a usual podcast episode here. But
you just got it in a nutshell. Free of liberation. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
and
man.
It's one
heck
best,
of a story.
One of the best free feelings. And I would like to say, do I still go through some painful moments and hurt? And is it easy? No. But each day gets easier when I choose me, when I consistently put my support system in play and I keep working on my mentality and working on me. And as you said, choosing me, that, oh my gosh, Kim, you're so worth the life that you want to have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, and so, and I think you answered one of the questions I was going to ask, because people see this, they see it. You can laugh, you can joke, you can have joy in your life despite all of your past, but it is still, there are some tough days.
Yeah, they are. You know, like I said, my adopted mom passed away in April, and it was a hurtful experience for all of us. And even at the funeral, there were some hurtful experience, for hurtful moments that me and my children will never forget. But at the end of the day, we were, our foundation, their foundation was different, you know, than mine. And I'm just so glad that I was a blessing, that I built that foundation, you know, for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, that's remarkable, you know. And let's see here. I was just going to actually share the cover of your book for people to see, because it's, boy, what a story, you know? Yeah.
So it's that just, picture there, I don't have any infant pictures. I don't have any pictures with me and my biological parents at all. But that's the first picture that my adopted parents had of me. And that's why that's so, that's why I chose that one.
the epitome of Kimmy. Wow. Yeah.
And my adopted dad, the Kimmy came from my adopted dad. That was the name that he called me. He would say, and you were talking about, we can laugh, we can smile. He invested in me. I remember him when my mom, and she wasn't intentionally hurting me. It was just generational talk, was explaining features, and that their skin tone was a lot lighter than mine, both of them. And
she
was comparing, and she said that, but you don't look like us. Your features, your nose, you know, your mouth, you know, you don't look like a, she had names for everything. She said,
right.
But you're still ours. And I remember him looking at my face, and I was around 9 or 10, but I knew exactly what she was talking about. So I'm like, whoa, okay. Right. And so he said to me, He pulled me aside and he said, come here, Kimmy. I need to say something to you. He said, I noticed a change. He said, stop hiding your smile. He said, the world's going to need your smile. And yeah, that just resonated. And I would never forget. That's why I think I serve as the angel from him. Looking at him down. Yeah. But I got you. I'm going to, you know, smile throughout, you know, until I can't smile anymore. Yeah. So he invested that. He said, stop hiding your smile. The world needs your smile.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you were to just sum up, you know, and just a small nugget of, you know, like from one heck of a story, you know, and it's hard to do it. And I really encourage people to go and read that story.
Yes.
You know, the epitome of Kimmy.
That's her wife read. This is what she thinks. Yeah. Cause you guys got a bundle of joy. And I'm so happy for you all. Congratulations. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I know he's just full of love.
Yeah. Yeah, this kid, you know, we said, hey, man, if you ever understood what we were saying, you know, we call him, he's the cutest boy in the world. He's the most loved boy in the world. Like, we just, you know, we're like, oh, man. But I mean, we're trying to lay down a solid emotional foundation where he just knows love and security from early on, you know?
Big time.
And yes. Yeah. You know, but we got a little later start in life. I was close to 40 when this happened. So
see, I was 42 when I had mine. Yeah. So we're still rocking. We're going to
do this. Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
We're going to have to take a trip sometime. I have to come and see the mountains with mine.
You do. Okay. Well, you'd be very welcome to. That'd be absolutely a pleasure to. So what would you share with people as kind of, you know, the biggest takeaway, you know, that you could offer people, you know, having gone through all that you've been through, what would you like to say to people?
You don't have to let your past define you. And you have a choice to be free, to be liberated, as you said. The biggest gift, the most important gift that you can give yourself is to choose you.
That's amazing. What amazing words to finish. Kim, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure.
I appreciate it. A pleasure to you, too. And let your wife know I'm looking forward to hearing from her. Okay.
Will do.
Take care of yourself. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Between the Before and After. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, or leave a review, because that helps this podcast to reach and inspire more people. I love exploring the stories that take place between the before and after, the powerful experiences that shape who we become. And I love human potential. I love the possibilities that lie within us. So whatever you may be up against, I hope these stories inspire you, because if you're still here, your story's not done yet, so keep moving forward.
Anyone can come from any place of brokenness and destitution and build an amazing life.